It's Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. A quick update for you now. Authorities have arrested a 43-year-old Wixom man who they believe is connected to a series of shootings on and around I-96. Police say the arrest happened last night at the suspect's home, and it was the result of information received over the past few days. Potential evidence was collected at the home and is now being tested by police crime labs. The suspect's vehicle is known to match the description given by one of the shooting victims. What does it take to be a survivor? To believe in yourself when it seems no one else will? To keep plugging away in the face of broken promises, disappointments, you name it, and to do all of that for 50 years? Well, the answer to that can be found in the life of our next guest. It has been 50 years since she recorded her very first single at age 16. And as you'll see in her new autobiography, A Woman Like Me, it has been a very tumultuous life and career from Muskegon-born, Detroit-raised Betty Jo Haskins, who became Betty LaVette. She's just released her new album, Thankful and Thoughtful, and she is performing tomorrow night at the Arc in Ann Arbor, and she joins us here in the studio. Betty, it is a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you, Cindy. How are you?
Doing great. And I'm going to put it out right now. Okay. Any autobiography that starts on page one with the star of the book being dangled by her right foot from a 28th floor window of a Manhattan high-rise and that foot being held by, and I'm going to quote here, a vicious pimp, that is a sign that this is not a girl who believes in living a neat, tidy life.
Well, Cindy, I don't think that I added that to my life to keep it from being neat and tidy.
No, you have had a roller coaster ride. You have to tell us because we don't want to give away a lot about the book because we want people to get out and buy it. But how were you being dangled from 28 floors by your right foot?
Oh, well, it was a man who was bigger than me. And it isn't, I think that when people visualize it, it's like this. But actually, I was being hung over it, and my legs were being bruised against the top of the building.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like if you were getting ready to jump and someone grabbed you.
Mm-mm.
It was more like that. He couldn't dangle me because, so it was really just holding me there by one foot dangling out in the air and the other one rubbing against this cement.
Yeah, looking death in the eye, but here you are. And you start with that, but then you do take us back to your early days. And I love as you talk about your young, young days. When did you first realize that singing was in your soul?
Oh, it was a very, very long time. It was just something that I could do for a very long time. I'd never seen anyone on stage before the night that I went on stage. My family was not a musical family, so it wasn't a thing where I had this burning passion from childhood. I could always sing, and people always liked it. And as a kid, of course, I liked them liking me. But it never occurred to me that I could be a singer. I'd never seen a singer. The songs I heard early were on jukeboxes. I had never seen a singer that I knew of. And when the gospel singers were coming to my house, they were just people who came and drank and sang. I didn't know them as singers. I just knew them as grown people who sung songs when they came to my house.
Tell us why they were coming to your house. You had such an interesting upbringing with your parents.
Well, my family sold corn liquor in Western Michigan and Muskegon during segregation. Of course, if you wanted to have a drink, if you were black after work, you couldn't drop by the neighborhood bar. Mm-hmm. And there were in Muskegon no black neighborhood bars other than my house. So you came there, and my mother, if you were a single guy, my mother had barbecue sandwiches and fried chicken sandwiches, and just dancing and listening to the jukebox and drinking and lying. There was no gambling, or there were no single women there, or if there were single men there, there were no single women there for them, just other guys. some people brought their wives because they all worked in factories together in Muskegon, and that was the neighborhood bar.
And then you moved to Detroit when you were how old?
I was just about to turn 4.
All right.
And then in Pontiac.
And then Pontiac.
We went, my whole family worked at one part of General Motors or another. When we lived in Muskegon, my parents worked for parts manufacturers, and we moved to Pontiac. They worked for General Motors, and then we moved to Detroit. They continued to work for General Motors.
And at that time, the music scene in Detroit for a girl that just felt song inside of her was what? What was it like?
Oh, it was really, really easy. Everyone who wasn't producing, well, there, no one was called a producer then. If they were called this guy who makes records. Mm-hmm. But no one was referred to as a producer. But everybody was doing this, or they were writing, or they were forming a group. Mm-hmm. And a lot of girls' groups were forming then, which there hadn't been any since the Andrews Sisters or that kind of thing. So with the Shirelles, with young black girls especially, looking into it and starting groups. And then there were a lot of young white girl groups as well. Everybody was singing. It was no big deal to record. Maybe it was a big deal because I was only 16 and because maybe nobody else in my 10th grade class had a record, but just to be in Detroit and record at that time was not a big deal.
Well, you recorded that first single for Atlantic when you were 16. Take a listen to a bit of My Man, He's a Lovin' Man. That sweet little voice. Now, what I got to ask you, to hear yourself on the radio at that age, so you're in 10th grade, you're going to and from school. What was that like to hear yourself singing on the radio?
Oh, honey, it was the same way a high school student would feel if they were drafted into the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, I was tantamount to a groupie being in show business. I mean, I was just dancing to these people's music just 1 month before. And now I was like, to consider them my coworkers.
You were one of them.
Well, I certainly didn't look at it that way.
Yeah, yeah. But, and I would had to imagine recording Atlantic, big label. They have a lot of big stars. I'm mm-hmm. on my way. And then
absolutely
not. And
right.
when you write in your book in A Woman Like Me, you have a phrase called buzzard luck. And that buzzard luck was?
Well, at that time, my first manager being shot by Mary Wells' husband and never recovering, you know. So, and he was the only, I only knew like maybe six people in the business. And so if something happened to two of them, one shot one, the other was shot, that put me down to four. So,
really, through the years, and when I say roller coaster ride, when you read Betty's autobiography, it truly was. It's an amazing story of so many big promises where some producer says, you're amazing. This is going to hit. Record for me. You do. You get your hopes up. And then, boom, big flop. And my
question. But one of the things for the book, though, for writing the book, is that nothing that ever happened was like what happened to anyone else, you
yeah.
know? So, I mean, whose manager gets shot by another singer's husband?
Yeah. So you were dogged by buzzard luck. I felt so heartbroken for you as an ambitious young singer. You finally get a chance to record an album. It had been so many singles. You were so excited. And then you open up the box and you look at the album and your picture is not even on the album cover.
Right.
All right. So how did you keep the faith and keep believing in yourself and not just say, forget it, I'm done, over those decades?
I really, over the decades, just sticking with it became easier because if I quit after doing this for 30 years, that would mean that I would be 60 or so mm-hmm. anyway by the time I became as proficient at anything else as I was at singing. And what Jim Lewis had always told me, my manager that I talk about so much in
yes.
the book, he said, you may never be a star, but if you will learn to sing and learn a whole gang of songs, all kinds of songs, you can work until you die. He said, it's like any other job. And looking at it that way made me look at it the way people get up and go to work every day. I really had to look at it as my job. And that was more important than anything else. It was my job. Even if it only paid $50 a night or whatever, it was pretty much tax-free. It was so funny. My band laughed at me because I was so excited about paying taxes because I never made enough money to pay any taxes. So I was thrilled.
To pay taxes.
I was.
Well, Betty, your career got a tremendous jumpstart in 2008. You were invited to sing at the Kennedy Center Honors. The Who's Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey were among those being honored. And you took the stage and you served up an astonishing version of Love, Rain, or Me. Betty, I watched the CBS broadcast of that because I'm a huge Who fan. And I saw Pete Townsend cry. I saw him. He was tearing. You said Roger Daltrey got down on his knees to you afterward. And what was so striking was this tiny little lady gets out on stage.
He didn't get down on his knees to me. He knelt down.
He knelt down. And there you go. That's even better. All right. My question is, and I wondered this as I watched this, so I get to ask you, where do you go when you are doing that? When I mean, it's so raw. Where are you going inside yourself?
Well, the only place I can go, to me. I mean, I couldn't go to Roger Daltrey or to anyone else. When people say, how do you make these songs your own? I said, it would be so much more difficult to sound like Roger Daltrey than it is to sound like me. So I can't make them anybody's but my own. And when I hear them, the way I sing them, that's the way I hear them. So I don't understand what the great perplexion is that I don't sound like Roger Daltrey.
Oh, not so much that, but I wondered how you get yourself in a place where you can just put everything away, who's out there, what's going on, and you are just able to find something at every time you sing, not just this song, but all of them. And it just made me wonder how you're able to tap into that. So
well, that's
beautiful.
That's probably the adolescence in me. It's I can't think about anything else when I'm doing one thing. So, but no, when I'm doing the songs, the words are very important to me. And if they're words that are saying a particular thing, I can't act one way and say another. I'm just not that good. So if the song is something that made me cry yesterday, more than likely it'll make me cry today.
And you just record songs you love anyway, right?
Just record songs. I'm catching so much flack right now about being a cover artist. I think if you're a singer, hell, sing the songs. Just sing the songs that are written. You know, I'm not trying to discover a new universe or whatever. I want you to hear me sing this song that we all love. Hear the way I sing it. You know, hear the way Ray Charles sing it. Hear the way Smokey Robinson sings it. I think we all should sing each other's songs. They're songs.
There you go.
They're just songs.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Betty LaVette, whose new book, A Woman Like Me, her autobiography is out, as is her new CD, Thankful and Thoughtful. And I got to think, the first time you said you were on stage, you'd never even seen a live singer. What do you get from your audiences when you're standing there and performing? And I get the feeling for an artist like you, it could be 5,000 people, it could be five people.
It's being more close to 5,000. So yeah. I'm getting a chance to deal with that a little more than I ever dealt with it before. Yeah. But I knew what I wanted in an audience. My whole approach to show business and to singing now is completely different than it has always been or than it was when I was younger. First of all, I don't care what the audience thinks at this point, and that was my only concern at one point. I pretty much sing for myself. I try to sing it. I want it to be good for me. I want it to be as good as I can possibly do it. And if it's a song that I like, then certainly it is like eating ice cream or something. You know, I like it, so I want it to be good and work out well. But now my audience is pleasing me so much because, for one thing, it is an audience. It isn't an audience that came for a wedding, and I happen to be there. It's not an audience that there are five people there who like me, and they're listening attentively, and the other people are talking all over them. The audience is the Ray Charles audience I've always looked for. They're blacks, whites, young, old, And that's really all I've ever wanted, was just a large audience that existed all over the world.
And the latest CD is Thankful and Thoughtful. Let's check out a bit of the Kim McLean song, The More I Search, The More I Die. For the sake of both our souls, the more I search, the more I die. I wanna feel, I wanna be alive. Am I saved from, or am I broken? Am I healed, or do you think I'm just justified? You say, Betty, that's your favorite?
Yes, oh. It definitely is. If I could write, this is what I would have written. This is definitely what I would have written.
Your band's great, and that touch of banjo in there. And you're saying you don't know what they put in the water in Nashville, but
really, it hurts the women so bad. It makes them write these songs, and they're just perfect songs.
Betty, what do you think about the American Idols, The Voice, The X Factor, all of that today, holding out the promise of maybe jumping the line and kind of cutting in ahead? Would you have tried that if you were a young artist?
I think it should be done just the way it used to be done with, well, here locally in Detroit, we had a program called Anti-D. And nationally, they had Major Bowls. And I think it should be that. I think that they should be considered newcomers. I think they should be considered children if they're 17 and 18 years old. And I think that at most they should win the opportunity to maybe make a record, go on the road with someone and learn to defend themselves, because Lord knows they better not run up against me. My greatest dream is to have one of them with these voices of clarity, power, and purity run up against me in a baby grand piano and sing softly. It took me years to become the singer that I am. And it's just so insulting that you could become that in 13 weeks or that we could have a genius a year. Mm-hmm. What is a genius if we can have them that quickly?
Well, certainly by going through your book, A Woman Like Me, you will learn. You got to weather a lot of hard knocks. And also a good lesson that success comes when it's going to come. It may not
there
come at
go.
The beginning. You just hang in there. Betty
LeVette. My mother says you know what's done happen, but you don't know what's going to happen. She has never been more right. There's no way you could have told me that at 100 years old I would have a career dumped in my lap.
And the book is A Woman Like Me, and it is out from Blue Rider Press. And latest album is Thankful and Thoughtful. And Betty LeVette, thank you for joining us on Stateside.
Thank you so much, Cindy, for talking with me.
Stateside's executive producer is Zoe Clark. Stateside is engineered by Mark Brush. Contributors are Allie Billings, Ellen Cortezoa, Emily Fox, Cameron Stewart, and Mercedes Mejia. This program is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm Cynthia Canty. Thanks for listening. Tomorrow we will talk at 3 and we'll have all the election results you need to know. Have a good day.